On today's show, we'll be joined by weekly co-host Ben DuBose to take a look at the slightly concerning trend of Jalen Green not getting the basketball at the end of games as the Rockets' best player on the floor. But then we'll also look at some of the encouraging signs of this Houston Rockets season, namely the fact that when Jalen Green plays well, this Rockets team has played competitive against some very, very good teams so far this year. Then we'll also take a look at none other than the Goon Squad, the three-man lineup off the Houston Rockets bench, KJ Martin, Tari Eason, Usman Garuba, the impact that they're having, what the lineup data suggests, and much, much more. All of that coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The Houston Rockets select Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
You're getting somebody who's going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, somebody who's going to come in and compete from day one.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
What's up and welcome to another edition of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and credentialed media member. I'm also the host of Locked On NBA Mondays, host of the State of the Rockets podcast, as well as Rockets Watch. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, free and available wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube, where you can help the show out tremendously by commenting anything below. Remember the mantra, for the house, for the team, for the algorithm. Go comment anything on the YouTube channel. It helps out a ton. Now, today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. We've got a lot to get to today. We're going to focus on the slightly concerning trend of Jalen Green not getting touches at the end of games. We're going to focus on some of the encouraging signs of this Houston Rockets season, namely the fact that when Jalen Green plays well, which he's played well more often than he hasn't, the Rockets have been competitive. And then we'll also take a look at the Goon Squad, the three-man lineup off the Houston Rockets bench, KJ Martin, Tari Eason, and Usman Garuba, the impact that that lineup has had, and much, much more. Joining us now is our weekly co-host, none other than the podfather himself, Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose, who we sorely missed last week due to some slight technical difficulties that I will take 100% of the blame on. Now, Ben, it feels like we've talked about this topic ad nauseum at this point, but
yeah.
Kevin Porter Jr. as the point guard for this Houston Rockets team, I feel like a broken record talking about, we see a game where Jalen Green is playing well, has a great night, you know, has it going. And then we get to the fourth quarter and he gets iced out of the offense. And there's really only two places that you can kind of point the fingers when that happens. It's the point guard on the floor in Kevin Porter Jr. and it's the coaching staff sitting on the bench in Steven Silas. And it's this recurring growing trend. And I'm just wondering, how concerned are you that it feels like this is just something that we've seen repeat itself consistently now, especially when the Rockets are in some of these close games where you'd like to see some of those shot opportunities, those shot attempts go to your big gun, quote unquote, in Jalen Green.
Yeah. And it's pretty much what we talked about the last time I was on the show. We just talked about it in the context of Eric Gordon getting the last shots. And now we're talking about, you know, in a different way, but it's the same problem. You're not getting the last minute high leverage shot attempts, or really last 6 minutes, because despite Jalen having 33 points, he only shot three times down the stretch of that game. You're not getting the high usage, high leverage reps to your best players. And sometimes you can put it on Alperen Şengün playing really well, but that was not the case in New Orleans when he fouled out in just 19 minutes. So that's something you can point to. You know, there are some circumstances when all P has played as well as especially he has since coming back from the illness, then sometimes you sort of run your offense through him. And so it may not be Kevin Porter Jr. as your point guard. It may be your, you know, I don't want to call him a point center, but he certainly, you know, can be like a fulcrum of the offense at times. But in this case, no, that was not what was going on. He was not even out there on the floor because he fouled out in Saturday's game in New Orleans. So it's very frustrating. I don't want to put it all on the feet of Kevin Porter Jr. I think there's some blame to go around for the coaching staff as well. I actually thought when I went back and rewatched the fourth quarter today, when it comes to Kevin Porter Jr., I think you should almost split his turnovers into two buckets. There's the turnovers that are from bad reads or maybe his processing speed not being quick enough. That's something we hear a lot about on Twitter. And then there's turnovers due to just a shaky handle or just ball handling errors. And I think this past week, we've actually seen the latter. It's felt like in Orlando, which they held on, and then in New Orleans, it feels like the scouting report is out there that the Rockets don't really have a super steady ball handler. There's a reason why there's not that many 6'6" point guards. I mean, this is going to be a simplistic take, but there's also some truth to it because, quite frankly, it's a lot tougher to stay on top of your handle in your lower half relative to someone that's, you know, Jose Alvarado, much lower to the ground and is able to sort of pick your pocket, especially when they dial it up to, you know, to use a Pat Beverly-ism, Mr. 94 feet, to take that approach. And that's what we've seen Orlando and now New Orleans do, and just force some sloppy things before the Rockets can even get into their half court offense. So to me, it's a perfect storm. I didn't really see, I guess, the silver lining, too many terrible decisions from KPJ in the half court. But I think there was a lot of not even getting into the normal half court sets to begin with. You had a couple of Eric Gordon possessions when thrown into the mix as well, where he just went, it looked like basically an and one mixtape as opposed to trying to actually get his teammates involved. So it's tough. I mean, the turnovers for KPJ are up there. I don't know if they're, you know, more or less correctable in that, you know, it's less about the reads this time and it's more about just the technique. The Rockets don't really have another guy they trust to bring the ball up the floor. It reminds me a lot of, you know, when James Harden was the only point guard pre-Chris Paul, pre-Russell Westbrook, the way Marcus Smart would just pick him up 94 feet if the game was there for the taking. And James Harden, for all his great decision-making when it came to reads, now he processed the court, just the sheer ball handling, when he was really pressed 94 feet, could give him problems at times. It feels like that's what they're doing to Kevin Porter Jr. And that's what it feels like to me. I know I've given sort of a roundabout answer to that, but it's just hard because there's not one flaw. It's not like you can say, well, if KPJ just gets more used to it and, you know, can read this situation a second or two more quickly, then that's what's going to be the solution. No, there's a lot of blame to go around, and it's in so many different areas.
And I don't want to look, I was maybe a little bit overly negative than I usually am in the recap immediately after this game against the Pelicans, because it really felt like, right, that we got baited into thinking the win was there, right? Like the right. Comeback happened. They were on top. Yeah,
from 26 point swing.
Down 18 on top 8, and you're thinking like, wow, they're going to, like, and to be fair, the Pels have off to, you know, rough start this season. So it's not like you're knocking off, you know, the Utah Jazz, a juggernaut in the NBA.
Right.
No, but legitimately, it was just, it was frustrating because you saw so much, you saw the flashes of talent. You especially saw a really promising night from Jalen Green. And then it all kind of started to fall apart there in the fourth quarter. But one thing that I do want to reiterate here before we move on to our next segment is just, I definitely have kind of transitioned a bit more so from, you know, the issues that we're seeing are directly, to the fault of KPJ versus Kevin Porter Jr. is running a system that feels out of place. And he's also kind of out of place in this system because it's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. He's not a point guard. And it's okay. We've done this song and dance for a year. We've seen, you know, what this could potentially be, and they're going to probably stick with it for a little bit longer. It's not done just because I'm here griping about it on a podcast, but it does kind of feel like we have enough of an idea that, hey, he's not going to be the long-term answer as a full-time point guard. And he's kind of playing out of position because he's a better secondary creator, a guy who can play off the ball and be that secondary presence offensively, that dynamic, you know, guy playing off of another more traditional point guard, if you will. And so I'm trying to kind of realign my ability to analyze this stuff under that context, because in that light, I think you're looking at two guys, Jalen and KPJ, who both had, a mountain of turnovers in this game, 7 for KPJ, 5 for Jalen, two dynamic, creating, scoring guards who were doing their best to create for their teammates, but were making some poor decisions throughout the game. And Jalen made the bulk of his early in that first quarter. Kevin Porter Jr. unfortunately made the bulk of his late, and then subsequently the Rockets also couldn't hit anything from the floor. They were 1-10 shooting in that fourth quarter. So it all kind of culminated in what was that really disappointing L. But I do want to focus on some of the positives, which actually, if the number one positive is Jalen Green looks like a freaking superstar. The fact that he can absolutely turn on the scoring at will, it feels like. I want to talk about what the eye test says versus what the numbers say. We're going to get there. But first, today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best, most qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. And it's so easy to create a free job post on LinkedIn Jobs. And once you have the job post made, all you have to do is add the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you are hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it incredibly easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonmba. That's linkedin.com/lockedonmba to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, Ben, we kind of discussed there in the first segment some of the frustrations that led to that loss and some of the concerns, but at least the number one positive should be Jalen Green looks good, and he's looked good a few games in a row, and he's back to looking like the Jalen Green that was scoring over a point per minute in preseason.
Yeah, and while the season-long efficiency numbers are, even with this recent stretch, just okay, the truth is that for most of this season, he's been really, really good. You just had that disastrous four-game road trip. So, you know, if you drill down a bit deeper, I know, you know, it would be cherry-picking to say, well, let's just throw it out altogether. But there have been many more games that he's been very, very good than even, I would say, average. It just so happens that his four games that he wasn't very, very good were just awful. And, you know, it is what it is. That leads to the season-long numbers being pretty good. But, you know, the true shooting percentage, last I saw, 54, 55 in that range, about what it was a year ago. But again, there's clearly room for growth because of your 13 games as we're recording this. The vast majority, I would say, at least 8 and I believe 9 have been very, very good, and it's trending the right direction. He hit that first patch of adversity and responded. So I'm very encouraged by him. And the other thing that I would say in terms of positives, look, the Rockets are giving themselves chances. When we last spoke 2 weeks ago before our technical glitches last week, we focused on the meltdown at Staples Center, or excuse me, now the Crypt, that Clipper game that they led by 5 late before Paul George took it over. And we'll see if the Rockets get some revenge against them on Monday night. But that was one of the only games of the first 8 or 9 that was actually there for the taking when it came down to crunch time. Now the Rockets have consistently gotten better. It's just this recently concluded road trip. You know, they won in Orlando, but they built up a 16-point lead and sort of had to hold on for dear life. They gave themselves a chance in Toronto and New Orleans, couldn't close the deal. Jonathan Fagan had a stat that, you know, I mean, definitely it's pretty sobering. The Rockets, they're close and late offense. The last 5 minutes of games that are close, it's 40 points lower than the Lakers for the season as a whole. And the Lakers have the NBA's worst offense. So that puts into perspective how dreadful it's been. Yet it does remind you that the Rockets do have a higher gear than that. There's a reason the Rockets don't have the worst offense in the NBA for the season as a whole. There have been bright spots. And if you keep putting yourself in these situations, then maybe you can learn from it and get better. Because a couple of weeks ago, the Rockets were not even close enough for us to be having this discussion with, you know, a couple of outliers like that Clipper game excluded. By and large, the Rockets were not even giving themselves a chance against teams like, you know, I know they're not perfect, but Toronto and New Orleans, those are talented teams. You're playing them on the road, winning organizations. And you had a situation in both of those games where you could have won it with some better execution late. It didn't happen, but I think that's part of sort of the growing process. So that's the good way to look at it, is that, you know, the Rockets undoubtedly have gotten just their overall level of play. The Rockets are much more competitive now than they were a couple of weeks ago. There is progress. It's just, it doesn't feel that way because the Rockets, you know, they spend so much of the first 42 minutes looking competitive, sort of teasing you, if you will. And then it feels like the final 5 or 6 minutes, they can't get out of their own way. They're also not getting the shot attempts, not enough of them, at least, to the guys you're really trying to develop, like Jalen Green, like Alperen Şengün. We've talked about that before, and whether that's Steven Silas, Eric Gordon, Kevin Porter Jr., we could go round and round. I think it's a combination of things rather than one. But the positive is that they are giving themselves more chances late in games than they have before. And hopefully if they do this going into a stretch now where 5 of the next 6 are at home, maybe that's the ticket to getting over the hump. And maybe, you know, learning from the film room of this is hopefully the ticket to getting Jalen Green more of those reps when everything's on the line. Because right now he's clearly your best option when it comes to, you know, having someone just go out and make a play, be it, you know, making a shot over somebody, creating off the dribble. He's clearly your most talented player, and he's showing you over this past week or two.
Yeah, and I'd even take your point a step further, Ben, and I'd say that even if you go down the list, right? Like, I mean, the season opener against Atlanta was encouraging, yep. Even though it wound up you 10-point loss, but they were very much in that game until the wheels kind of fell off late in the fourth. You do the same thing with the Grizzlies. You both of the Jazz games were kind of ugly, but they were right there in it with the Jazz both times. Then you get to the Blazers and Suns games, which wound up being, even though they were competitive against the Suns until Devin Booker and Chris Paul came in with 5-6 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Yeah, and they just closed them out effectively. So
yeah, I guess it was largely that road trip that really skewed their numbers a bit. I mean, I would say that second Jazz game, they sort of had the fake comeback, but they were largely outplayed in that game. Yeah, I guess your point is well taken in that, you know, the first three games at least, even though they didn't, well, the first two, that Milwaukee game was just a throwaway. Second night of a back-to-back against the NBA's best team. But yeah, the first couple of games, they went out and played well, really for the team as a whole. And I guess the way to tie this all together is, you know, they've been competitive this season with the exception of that road trip, the exception to the exception being that game against the Clippers. And what was different about that road trip relative to the rest of the season? Those were the four games in which Jalen Green was not at his best. When Jalen Green is right, and we talked about that, you know, basically the lead off the season and then really these last five games, when Jalen Green is right, the Rockets have been competitive. It's just a matter now of taking what you see over the first 42 minutes of those games and trying to make it extrapolate more to the final six.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jalen Green's, he's the tip of the spear, right? The Rockets will only ultimately go so far as Jalen Green takes them. And right now, so far for the season, again, the efficiency numbers, not quite exactly where you'd want them to be overall, but he's averaging just under 22 points per contest now on, 47% shooting from the floor, 38% from long distance. Not terrible numbers overall for Jalen Green. Again, you'd like to see the efficiency kind of start creeping up, you know, going a bit more northbound, but overall,
and getting more free throws, which will really help your true shooting percentage for sure.
Right. The free throw, Jalen Green, and officials are not allowed to blow the whistle for Jalen Green. I am fully convinced, Ben, that James Harden did some like rabbit's foot trickery or whatever, where he like mortgaged the next like 20 years of free throw attempts for the Houston Rockets to be the league leader in free throws for however many years it was directly here in Houston that he led in that stat. So
without a doubt.
Yeah, something like that. But Jalen Green is showing flashes of his brilliance aside from that little pocket where he really struggled. And the Rockets, by and large, have been competitive when Jalen Green is at his best. And that should be one of the early season takeaways for this Rockets team. Coming up, we do want to talk about a couple of the other positive notes from this Rockets team. Tari Eason and Usman Garuba, two-thirds of the goon squad off the Rockets bench, if you will. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis this season. Get the latest odds and trends for every single professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball, soccer, even esports. They've got you covered for everything over at BetOnline.net. Right now, you can take a look at who the odds-on favorites are to win the NBA title this season. You got the Boston Celtics at plus 550 leading the way, but the Milwaukee Bucks right there at plus 550 as well. Golden State Warriors in third place at plus 700. And then rounding out the top five, you have the LA Clippers at plus 800 and the Phoenix Suns at plus 1,000. So for all of those odds and more, be sure to visit betonline.net to learn more about the trends and action available to you. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making LOR your first listen. For your second listen, go check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Ben, the Goon Squad has been one of the best revelations of this season. First off, I love the nickname as dubbed by Ryan Hollins. And then two, it really does feel like that trio off the Rockets bench of KJ Martin, Tari Eason, and Usman Garuba are really all starting to find their rhythm. They're all starting to play really well with one another. And we got our first glimpse at the Goon Squad plus Jalen Green, basically, you know, and then also Dacian Nix as featured in that lineup, who Dacian Nix had some really, really solid playmaking.
He's gotten better the last week. For sure.
Yeah, Dacian Nix is trending upward. The price is going up, as a good friend of the program, Dave Hardesty, would say. But I have been so utterly impressed with what those three guys have done off the Rockets bench, kind of the little like niche they have found for themselves. Their ability to come in and impact the game without overplaying their hand, right? All three of those guys understand what they are good at. They stay in their lane and they do it well. And here, look, it's a tiny sample size. Only 73 minutes total played. But as far as Rockets three-man lineups are concerned, the three-man lineup of KJ Martin, Usman Garuba, and Tari Eason has a plus 26.5 net rating in 73 minutes played with one another. They come in and they make things happen on the basketball floor time and time again.
Yeah, absolutely. The one hesitation that I have is buying into Tari's early three-point shooting numbers, which are a pretty small sample. But if he can keep it even just passable, like let's say mid-30s, enough to keep defenders honest, then that's enough to where the off-ball movement from both of those guys, KJ and Tari, is really going to put a lot of pressure on defenses, because if you're in the mid-30s, that's at least enough of a threat to where they have to consider you viable. And then the off-ball movement with a guy that's just a fantastic passer and really sees the floor so well, like Usman Garuba, it's dangerous. And then defensively, there's just, you know, there's length, there's athleticism. Above all else, it's just high IQ play. They all anticipate so, so well. They're relentless when it comes to their motor and their energy. So yeah, it's a really, really good trio. I do want to see the shooting hold up. We've seen a resurgence from KJ the last
couple. Wait. Who's shooting craters first? Usman Garuba at 80% or Tari Eason at 45%?
Well, I'm sticking with Usman at 80. That's definitely legit. That's definitely legit.
Currently on high volume, 4 or 5, although Ryan shooting from Hollins, 3 from the floor.
My God, when Usman hits a 3, Ryan Hollins loses his mind. I mean, he does it anytime Usman does anything, but even by Ryan standards, when Usman hits a 3, my God.
It is exhilarating to hear Ryan Hollins call a game. And like you said, when he gets so excited for Usman Garuba, get it, Uzi! Like, he's just losing it on the broadcast.
The one thing that I will say, though, about this, so it sounds so easy to say you've got to play these guys more minutes, but whose minutes are you taking away? Eric Gordon, as long as he's on the roster, is going to be, you know, I guess you don't have to give him 30. I guess you'd give him 25, but you're certainly not going to give him less than 25, I don't think.
I think that's where a lot of Rockets fans, not because of his own fault, but I think that's why Eric Gordon is rubbing a lot of Rockets fans the wrong way, is because they see some of the flashes, some of the talent from the other young guys, he's in the way.
I'm gonna get there in just a second. Jabari Smith is gonna play 30 minutes just because he's the number 3 overall pick in the draft. The year is about development for him, and he is getting better. He had 15 and 10 in Toronto last night. He had a career high 15 boards. The shot still is not there, but he's definitely making an impact in other ways, better than he was his first couple of weeks. So as long as that shot comes around, and again, we have way too much of a sample with regards to his shooting to panic at this point, then ultimately, you're not going to say he's going to be good as a rookie, but he's going to be a lot better than he was to start the year. And he's definitely going to be worthy of someone that you play 30 minutes a game to develop. And then, of course, Alperen and Şengün should be playing 30 minutes a game at center, or at least upper 20s, for obvious reasons. Right now, even with, you know, 6 points and fouling out 19 minutes, he still grades out in some of the efficiency metrics, is one of the top 25 players in the entire NBA to this point. He's really been that good. And of course, you can quibble over, well, you know, do his defensive liabilities undercut that a bit, perhaps to some extent, but when you're 2-11 and it's not like you're planning to win this season anyway, then a guy that's putting up those numbers, you owe it to yourself to find out just how viable it is, and if maybe those defensive liabilities can be improved, which the only way you can do that is by putting him out there. So there's a lot of guys that are competing for minutes, and we haven't even mentioned Jason Tate, who's barely played this season with the ongoing ankle issues. When Tate is back, he's a guy who, like Eric, it's tough to justify playing less than 25 minutes a game. So while you'd like to say, hey, KJ, Tari, Usman, let's play these guys more and more, it's tough. And I would just say there's two things. First off, it's going to be a huge test for the Rockets whenever Bruno Fernando comes back. I don't see how you can put Bruno Fernando at least back in the starting lineup. I wouldn't put him in the rotation at all, because it's just so tough to play three centers, and Usman Garuba has showed you to this point he's worthy of minutes. You have to play Şengün, and I think Garuba has showed you at this point it would be a mistake not to at least give him 18 minutes a game and see what you've got there off the bench. He was a first-round pick for a reason. This is a year before you have all the cap room. You need to find out what you have in guys like that. Bruno Fernando is someone that, you know, when players inevitably get hurt, he can step in and get minutes, but it's not like you're expecting him in the grand scheme to really be a difference maker for you. So I know you had these plans going into the season of starting Bruno. We talked about this going in, but honestly, sometimes circumstances change. And the way Şengün has played, the way Garuba has played, I just don't know where the minutes for Bruno comes from. And it's going to take, you know, Steven Silas just sort of, you know, acknowledging that, hey, the circumstances are different now than a month ago. I hope he does, because to me, playing Bruno Fernando more than, you know, at the most, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, and if it's that small, then what's the point? That's really going to eat into, you know, your available minutes for the Tari, KJ, and Usman tier. And the other thing that I would point out is that this really makes the case for trading Eric Gordon a lot stronger. I think in the past, the Rockets have held firm on this idea that they need him because of the veteran presence. And also they have a certain price. He's worthy of a first round pick that isn't especially low in a bad draft. And if they don't meet that, then they'll hold on to him. Well, at this point, you have these young guys that perhaps are more ready to play than people expected, at least in terms of Tari and Usman. I don't know if people said for sure over the summer that they'd be rotation players this year. It looks like they are. And in terms of the veteran role, look, you're going to have all this cap room this summer. You can sign veterans and probably will sign veterans with that. You could even re-sign Eric Gordon because he's going to be a free agent in all likelihood, assuming his option isn't picked up, if you want to bring him back and you see a need for that. So it's not like it was a year ago when you're saying, well, you know, Eric Gordon's just going to sort of steer this young group through, you know, just the mess of the next couple of years developing all these young guys. No, we're going to come to a point and, you know, it might even come sooner than the deadline. It might even come like around December 15th, the unofficial kickoff of trade season, because it's when the offseason guys can get dealt, in which the Rockets say, look, there's a minutes crunch. And I just don't know how you can play both Gordon, Tate, and all these guys that we've been talking about. Somebody, you know, something has to give, somebody that you need to develop that's more important in the grand scheme than Gordon or Tate. And especially Gordon, because of course, he's a few years older than Jayshon is. To me, it just makes the case stronger that, you know, in the past, you could say, well, Eric Gordon isn't really blocking anybody. So if you don't think you're getting fair value for him, then you know what? Yeah, just hold on, reap the benefits of his, you know, his floor spacing, his defense, his value in the practice court, et cetera, and maybe you get that value that you think he's worth at a later date. Well, I think now you're especially when Tate gets back, you're going to be approaching a point in which he actually is blocking guys that you need to develop, you know, as potential parts of your future. And so I could see that maybe shifting the calculus as we get closer, definitely to the deadline and maybe even, you know, to December 15th.
Yeah, I was definitely more so over the offseason, kind of in the camp of, okay, well, you need a veteran on this team. You need somebody to kind of help guide these guys and, you know, help them move along, you know, be you know, NBA, learn how to be NBA players, all that stuff. All the little, you know, veteran nuances that he's supposed to provide in the locker room. But I think they're actually getting to a point where go ahead.
I was just going to add in quickly, KJ Martin, his situation has changed as well over the summer. I think a lot of people thought that KJ might be on the way out. We heard the reports. He was uncertain about his role. Now he apparently loves to be in Houston. According to Kelly Eco, is open to a contract extension. So even though he's not as young as Tari or Usman, at the same time, his role is more fixed than a lot of people maybe thought it was a few months ago. And that plays into, you know, the Gordon equation as well.
Because of just the overall availability of minutes at the wing spot. And so, right, well, a lot of us were factoring, oh, well, KJ, he wants out, so don't even factor him into the rotation. And then and then there were still a glut between Jayshon Tate and Jabari Smith Jr. and Tari Eason. And now you've got KJ playing out of his mind, who's been one of the best developments of this Rocket season. So, yeah, Ben, there's a point where I look at the on-the-court production that Eric Gordon provides. And let's face it, right, he's there's moments where he's out there going through the motions. He's walking through plays. He's
especially
just out there.
Defensively.
Yes, especially defensively. And that is a big problem when you have guys like KJ or Tari or Jayshon over on the bench who can provide that much needed spark and intensity and enthusiasm, especially on the defensive side, to maybe get you some stops, right? To maybe, you know, ignite a fast break or two and generate some of those opportunities and you know, not have those and one dribble mixtapes in the fourth quarter, you know, leading to an ugly turnover. So
yeah, and to bring the discussion full circle to what we let off discussing, some of the issues in the fourth quarter, look, you've referred to Eric as Coach Silas's security blanket. I would call him sort of his training wheels. And at some point with these young guys, to develop them, you know, to get them the reps that they need to form a conclusion, not a definitive conclusion, but at least have a better idea by next summer, which you definitely want to have a good idea of your roster going into this offseason. You have up to $60 million in cap space. Then, yeah, you may need to take the training wheels off and see what happens if you give guys like Tari and Usman and KJ even more minutes and to see what they do with them. So, you know, it's a problem now, and Jayshon Tate isn't even playing. Imagine what's going to happen when Jayshon Tate comes back from the ankle injury to find these guys. Like, we're already saying that these guys should be playing more, and yet it's tough to see exactly where the minutes come from without taking some from Eric. And now you're about to throw Tate into the mix as well in many of those same positions, and perhaps Bruno Fernando as well. I know, you know, Bruno's a center, and, you know, Tari and KJ aren't, but at the same time, it's the front court. There is overlap to all of this, at least to an extent. It's going to get very crowded very soon. I hope they do the right thing with Bruno. And then, you know, certainly you're not going to remove Eric from the rotation. That would be stupid. But I do think that it plays into the consideration. It might nudge you a little bit as you get closer to December 15th and the unofficial kickoff to trade season. It might nudge you a little bit more than circumstances a year ago would have.
Last thing for you here, Ben, before we wrap this up, is there a world, do you think, where the Rockets adjust Eric Gordon's role to where he is coming off the bench once again in his career here in Houston, and then they start somebody like a KJ Martin in that three spot, or even, you know, maybe a Jayshon Tate in that three spot? Or do you think that when the Rockets are ready to move on from Eric Gordon, it's going to be full stop, like, just, all right, Eric, you're traded and you're gone. And then that's how they kind of resolve the minutes crunch? Because I would love to think that there might be a possibility of Steven Silas just having that hard conversation with Eric Gordon and being like, hey, we love you for what you provide. You're a great veteran presence for us. But right now we need you in this role off the bench. We don't need you in the starting lineup anymore. We need to give those minutes and that opportunity elsewhere. I don't necessarily know if I think that's what's going to ultimately happen. I think it's going to have to be like rip the Band-Aid off type thing.
I think it's probably going to be that, only because it's not worth the reward. Like, having that hard conversation at the end of the day, look, if he's still on the team and in the rotation, and we're not talking about a John Wall situation in which he's permanently ramping up but not playing, then what does it really do? It might free up, what, take his minutes down from like 31 to, you know, 23 or 24. But at the same time, you're going to be bringing Tate back. You're going to be bringing Bruno back. I mean, at the end of the day, does that really move the needle? And so you also have to factor in, you know, are you perhaps lowering his trade value a little bit by giving him less, you know, counting stats, less visibility? I just don't know that they're going to view those like 7 minutes a game as really worth that conversation and any awkwardness that results. You know, I guess one way I could see it is if maybe not only could you say take him down from 31 to like 24, but if maybe you played him more as like a backup point guard. But as we mentioned earlier, Dacian Nix has started playing better over the past week himself, and so I'm not sure you want to remove Dacian from the rotation, or, you know, you also want to at least leave the door open to Josh Christopher, a first round pick from a year ago, perhaps, you know, having a resurge back into the rotation, a resurgence, if you will, to something closer to when he was at his best in the first half of last season and showed some flashes. So, you know, even that path is not clean. It's like, I guess you could put him more in the backcourt. And, you know, I guess, like, between us, I would rank definitely Dacian and Josh as well as like a slightly lower tier of prospects relative to Tari and KJ. But still, even if Eric was open to doing something like that and by doing so, you know, it'd be closer to maybe 15 minutes instead of eight, because it's not just the eight overall minutes, it's that you're using them at different spots that maybe allow you more minutes for guys like Tari and KJ in the front court. It's just, it doesn't really dramatically change the situation. To me, it's just more likely to be a Band-Aid ripped off. I'm sort of with you on that. I think it's just, unless you're willing to go the John Wall route, to me, just an incremental bump here or there is not going to dramatically change the picture, and it might even hurt the value a little bit. So at this point, we're also in mid-November already. We're only a month away from sort of trade season getting here anyway, and we've started to see the last couple of years in December more and more deals. Teams are ready to act earlier in the season to give them more time to sort of integrate their pieces with the roster. So when we're sort of inside a month anyway to the period in which things could really start to happen around the league, at this point, I tend to think that they just sort of ride it out and then revisit this in December. With that said, if there's not a deal in December, then yeah, at that point, maybe you start to say, hey, maybe there's some incremental bump that we can get. But at least until then, I say just ride it out and let's see where we are come December 15th.
Letting Eric Gordon ride off into the sunset as a small forward on the Houston Rockets. Ton of fun. What a way to wrap up the episode. Ben, you know the drill. Let everybody know where to track you down at.
Yep, Ben Dubose on Twitter, the Rockets Wire on Twitter, and rocketswire.usatoday.com for all your daily Houston Rockets coverage.
That's going to do it for another edition of Locked on Rockets. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. We're also available on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked on Rockets. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.